So today I'm speaking to Kevin McAreevy, the amazing teacher featured in the Young Plato film. So, hey, Kevin, how are you?
Absolutely wonderful. The sun is shining. It is fantastic weather in Belfast. And weather changes the mood, definitely. It Before does. I came on here, I was grumpy. I looked out there, saw the sunshine, and here I am.
It's nice that you're speaking to me from the school as well. It's nice to have that extra connection, you know.
It's lovely. From where it all happened, Paula, Indeed. From where it all happened and where it all goes on, you see, when the movie stops, the show must go on.
So, do you want to tell our listeners a bit about the film and the part you play? Well, you don't play the part, obviously. You're the key player.
It's funny that, you know, because you're absolutely right. The director of the film, Nessa, was stopped in New York and she was asked, tell me this, the guy that plays the principal, how did you get him? He is brilliant. So I must be playing a principal. Maybe he's not really a principal. He's only playing one. There's the bells. Isn't it wonderful to hear a school bell, isn't it? You just gotta love that, so you do. So anyway, Nasty approached me with Declan, and they asked, could they come in? They heard all about the wonderful philosophy that was going on in the school, and could they come in and maybe do a wee bit of filming? And I says, listen, see, as long as you don't get in my way, you can do whatever you want. God, they were my famous last words. In my way, she chased me all over the school. I was like a covert operation. I was ducking in the rooms and all. She'd come and I'm joking.
You wouldn't know it though. Watching the film, like nobody really reacts to the cameras. It's all just as if you're a fly on the wall.
Yeah, it was beautiful that way. I mean, and that took an awful long time to get the children to sort of understand that, you know, the camera was just a part of normal school life, and they just get on and do the work that they're meant to do. You can see the lads, even as you know, none of it's scripted, although a lot of people when they watch the film will go, yeah, dead on, but nothing is scripted at all. When they filmed 1,000 hours, for me to learn 1,000 hours of script would be wonderful, wouldn't it? I'd be some principal, I really, really would, and the kids would be amazing too. But no, it was strange, you know, because all they did was follow me about, Paula, and follow Mrs. Reed about. And there was only one camera ever in the school, which was brilliant. So I knew exactly where it was and where it was going. And I could sort of have a wee bit of control over it. But whenever they brought it all together and sort of brought in that sort of film sort of structure, it was amazing to see how they did it. I just do my job here, and you know, they came and filmed it and then just sort of put it all together. It was terrific to see it, although there was a few bits left out that I would have liked to have seen in the movie, but that's the way it is. They were in my family home. They came in to see exactly how does Mr. McAreevy live and where does he live and who's his family and how philosophical are they. But my young daughter, Jane, she was to be one of the main characters in this. Not a lot of people know this. So she was to be one of the main characters, Jane. She's my philosopher. I've been doing philosophy with her from she was like 2-3 years of age. She's now 9. She's very articulate, very confident young girl. And I would have philosophy books at the bottom of her bed and would tell lots of stories and lots of questions and answers and things like that. So she was to be one of the main characters. But then COVID hit, so they couldn't really get an awful lot of footage in and around. They had filmed me around at the family table, looked at the whole family values and the no screen time and me talking about philosophy with my other guy. I'm a father of 4 girls and a principal of an all boys school. So that's kind of strange in itself. So it is.
It's all about you introducing philosophy to these young kids in Ardoyn in North Belfast. I mean, it's an area that has been touched in the past by, you know, the troubles and all the sectarian stuff that's kind of gone on in the past. And they do touch on that in the film. We do see kind of cutaways to, you know, these terrible times back in the day.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what it is, Paula. This door that I have, you just so for clarifying, I'll come back to what you're saying in a minute. this door, it's like the swinging door, you know, it just swings open and closed. Nobody ever wraps it, because that's what I have. That's the type of system I have. Just walk on in, you know. And you started off with saying it's not all about, it's all about you. And I just got this lovely message written to me. You know, and that was Mrs. Ray. The Senko. I call it the Senko. Never mind the Senko.
She's your co-star.
Yes, she's the co-star. So it's not all about you. She said to me, "That's what I'm doing." She brings the glamour. She said.
So the span of the movie. So was it, obviously we touched on Christmas and sort of the start of the year. So was it over a year, or what was the span?
Oh no, it was like over 2.5 years.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because of COVID. When that COVID so we would have got them in for a wee bit, and then all of a sudden there was a tighter lockdown, and then you're not allowed in, and then teachers were panicking and worried about the spread of the virus, and then we couldn't get them in, and we could get them in, and then I was making decisions to bring them in. People were saying, "What are you doing?" So listen, that's kind of why, and for me that's beautiful, because it captures a lot more kids for me. And I see, so I'm bringing back children to see the movie who are in first year, you know, and it's brilliant because they're getting their wee invites and going, "I'm sorry, I can't wait. Oh my God, it's really, really happening." You know, like, going, yeah, it really is.
You're starting with these kids at the age of 4. I love the bit in the beginning when these little tiny kids are coming in and they're high fiving you and hugging you. Oh man, it's just, you know, that age, they're like sponges. They're like little sponges, aren't they? They're so receptive to, you know, to everything.
Oh, quality, they really are. You see, I would be the type of principal, and Mrs. Reed's in the room, so I can't tell lies. I'd be the type of principal. But she says I will try. I'm the type of principal. I don't like to be in the office. I want to get out. I want to get into their classrooms. And I do that. I do that with, I try to get in all of the classrooms and see all the children, try to know all their names and say different things about them, know bits and pieces about families, and be able to sort of mention that to them. And you want to see the faces light up and say, "I'm talking to your daddy, and oh, your daddy, I used to teach him, and Mrs. Reed used to teach him." And they love that sort of interaction. So with the Premier ones and the Premier twos, I make sure I get into all of their classes, especially every week. I go in and I teach philosophy, I do some Irish with them, I do a bit of singing, and especially Christmas time with Silent Night, the Elvis version, I love doing that with them, you know. "Oh God, here comes Elvis again, sir." they absolutely love it. And even when I'm teaching the Irish to them, you know, we would say, okay, Cart Galore. Cart Galore. And then I'd say, okay, so say it like someone with a wee Irish accent. They go, "Cart Galore, Cart Galore." And then I'll say, "Well, do it like a wee bit like Jerry Adams or Cart Galore." And then of course my favorite one, Paul, which they all love doing, is, "Ladies and gentlemen, Cart Galore." You have a bit of fun with them, and so they'll always remember Cart Galore. You know, it's okay, So it's learning through fun for me, and the philosophy allows me to do that. It allows me to bring in those sort of moral dilemmas with them, looking at cheating and lying and stealing, and having talking about it, and that moralizing with them. You know, we would do the Ring of Gyges. I don't know if you know it. It's Plato's story about an invisibility ring, and if you find the invisibility ring, what would you do? You know, and they talk about lying and cheating and stealing and, you know, all this. So I don't moralize with them. I say, okay. So now I say, "Well, what should you do?" As opposed to, "What would you do?" And then all of a sudden it starts to sort of flip around and go, "Oh, would and should, and oh my goodness." And this is with 4 or 5 year olds, which is fantastic, you know. And you're looking at all those sort of moral dilemmas, you know, and can I lie? And then we always come to a point where it's okay to tell lies, sir. I say, "Well, yeah, Yeah, you trick lies when you're going to surprise parties and you don't want to tell your friend, you know those sort of lies. So it's wonderful. It really is. And it has, I have to say, it has raised standards and achievements throughout this school. And for me, that was the underlying theme of doing this philosophy, was to raise standards and achievements in numeracy and literacy in the school.
Yeah. I mean, we have to talk about your love of Elvis. You know, it's very, very yes. well documented in the film with your Elvis in the car. You got the Elvis on the window in your office, which unfortunately got put in the bin at one point during the film.
I don't know what you mean.
You're singing all day. You know, I mean, what is it about Elvis for you that kind of strikes a chord?
Yeah. Well, I was brought up with Elvis. Growing up in Lennadoon, my father was a massive Elvis fan. So, honestly, and I said this here in the Ryan Turbidy interview, and my dad says, What'd you say that for? I says, Dad, because it's true. on a Sunday morning, when my dad was his hangover, right, he put Elvis on to lift him. Now, my daddy was an early riser. Yeah. As young lads, we weren't.
Yeah,
early writers, and he just used to blast Elvis gospel all over the house, and so that's what got me up. Welcome to my world. That was one of his favorites, and you could just hear him singing it all over the house. Welcome to my world. So we kind of all grew to love. I mean, the whole family. We all grew to love Elvis, and then all his movies, we would have watched all his movies, and I know he made 33 movies, and not all of them are great, but I'd say Elvis is brilliant no matter what he does. But I mean, five fantastic movies that he did make that I could stand over and say the man was a genius. But so when I listen to Elvis and I listen to the words of a lot of his songs, and especially If I Can Dream, which is in the movie, and where it comes from the If I Can Dream from Martin Luther King, and it's so inspirational for me to see her singing and songs and words can change moods and can promote mental health and well-being. Now, and believe it or not, I'm going to digress slightly here.
Yeah, yeah.
I would do Johnny Cash songs and Bob Dylan songs with the staff, with the classroom assistants as part of philosophy. You know, When a Man Comes Around by Johnny Cash, I would have the lyrics and I'd say this. Does it lift you? What sort of emotions does it bring on to you?
So you
can use a song to frame philosophy, and it really works when you look at the likes of Bob Dylan and how inspirational. And I think Bob is a philosopher too. Mm, Bruce Springsteen, another great philosopher. George Michael, fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, all these guys, the words in their songs have meanings that just affect all of our lives, and I think that it's a great way to use philosophy in the school.
Yeah, we have to talk about the amazing kids in this film. I mean, the bit with I think it's Rory and Gerard when there's a fight happens.
Yes.
And it's all about sort of them. So Rory, I think it's Rory, has to apologize. He apologizes to Gerard, and there's a bit where they're in the classroom, and he's
beautiful.
He's in tears. And he hugs Gerard, and it's like, oh man, I was just
the empathy there is just nothing short of amazing. It really is, and to capture that in real terms, and that there's no acting or anything, you know, it was just. And I actually didn't know that happened because I actually leave the room.
Yeah,
you know, they continue to film, obviously, and you can see that. I mean, Rory wasn't aware of the camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there were two people in that room. You know, there was Declan and there was Jared. Declan was the messenger, and Declan was the sound man. I always said he was sound, so that he was all right, you know. But Jared has since left us, Jared Collins. Jared has since left us, and we're trying to contact him to bring him along to the movie. But I think we will be able to, but I'm not sure if he'd be able to make it. But he should. He's a great lad, and that was, you see, with COVID, and the reason why an awful lot of the altercations take place, Paul, is because of COVID.
I had to
take the footballs. I mean, kids just love football, so I had to take the footballs out of the yard because you had to put the kids in the zones. and they had to stay in the zone. So if it was a football, then the football was going in the other zones, and then they were running to get the football, kick that ball back, and all this. So, and that's why they're sort of this sort of wrestling, play fighting, and yeah, this sort of, you know, what children do, Paula.
Yeah, it was nice to follow little stories like with the two cousins who just kept just kept falling out, and it was just an ongoing saga. You know, you're like, are you friends? What, you're cousins.
and again, you know, you look at that there, and you sort of stand back and say, he scripted this. No way. Yeah. So those kids. I mean, I think they were in Premier 6 at the time. Or maybe the Premier 5 or Premier 6 at that time. Might have been at the end of the P5. But you can see how confident and how articulate they are in communicating.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, and that's, I mean, I obviously had them from Premier 1 right through the Premier 5 during the philosophy, because philosophy's been in school 9 years now. And it's fantastic to see young kids being and talk and in a way that young boys don't normally talk, because us Irish boys, we are, I mean, even me, the way I've sort of brought up, you know, we're not really in touch with your feelings, you know, you have to be tough, you have to get on with it. What do you mean you're feeling? What do you need? Get up and get on with it, you know. My father never took me on his hand there, son, and stroked with her, and all, you know, never get up and get on with it, you're all right, you know. So that's why I find it's important today. But that built up my resilience. Just to go back to that, when you were that young and you were always on the street. Now the kids aren't on the street now. They're always doing screen times and phones and screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means there's no real social interaction, which worries me greatly. And I believe maybe contributes to the high suicide rate around here. When the kids aren't getting out to build a resilience, I used in the street, probably you got a smack in the mouth, you get on with it.
Yeah,
you know, you didn't run into mom and dad. You know, you walked it out on the street because you were always on the street. You were socializing and you were learning those sort of emotional intelligences, and that's the difference between me then and the kids now. They're not out in the street.
Yeah, yeah. What were you like as a kid? Were you kind of in the thick of it?
This is Ray's laughing. So as a kid, well, you see, I grew up in Lanadoon, and it was a sort of inner city area, and it was sort of, there was always alpha males trying to sort of get them fit in to where you were within the crowd, and there would have been a lot of fighting.
Yeah,
when I grew up, you know, that hand to hand fisticuffs. Wasn't really that much to do. I mean, if somebody had a football, you used to call to the door and say, is John coming out? And say, no, well, is this football coming out? You know, I mean, can you imagine kids doing that these days? No, you certainly would. So as a kid, I was a sort of very determined wee boy, always wanting to push to be the best in anything that I did. And like every other boy back then, I was involved in scrapes and got angry, because obviously during that time there was a heavy presence of the British Army on our streets.
And listen,
that had a big impact on my family growing up, and I'm surprised I'm not more traumatized by what I saw sort of unfold with my own family. Breaking down doors and pulling us out of bed as kids, and dogs in your face, and shouting, "Where's the guns?" and all this, you know. And my mum saying, "There's nobody here," and of course, not listening to her and sticking a gun on her face, so she had to get stitches. And I remember as a child, and my father being dragged out of the house to be interned, and watching other. Sort of dads in the street, see the same sort of things happening to them as well, you know. So it was tough growing up. I think I'm very lucky to have a sort of loving mother who sort of put the arm around you, made sure you're okay, and pushed education. There's a way out, kid. There's a way out, son. You keep pushing it. And that's what I did, you know, just took education on board and the way I went with it.
Yeah, I mean, how did you get involved in the whole philosophy thing? It's not a very a natural progression for a lot of young lads, or even, you know, young guys.
No, it's definitely not. Well, how I got into philosophy actually was, I went to Queen's University, which was a big coup for somebody from our area to get to Queen's University, to be honest. So when I went to Queen's, in one of my years there, I did political ideologies and was introduced to all the philosophers, the political philosophers, and Hobbes and Locke, Bentham and Mill. And I remember being inspired by the thinking in and around those, and how I could apply it to me as a young adult. You know, the utilitarianism and the harm principles, and I actually loved learning about these state of natures. And I was going, this is all great stuff. Now, I obviously never thought about applying it anywhere, to be honest. When I left Queen's, I then went and did the PGCE at St Mary's Training College and became a primary school teacher. And then when I came to Holy Cross Boys, the principal was very innovative and creative in his own right, and he was all about promoting thinking skills and creative thinking skills, and he tasked me then when I became vice principal to create a learning community, and I thought, right, okay, well, so I brought a lot of educational researchers in just to make teaching better and to make thinking better for the kids and for the teachers as well, and train teachers up in effective questioning. So we brought in Edward de Bono, the six thinking hats. I'm sure you've heard of them. They're fantastic, and the kids relate beautifully to them. I mean, you could use six thinking hats anywhere, or you could use it in a meeting. You can use it even to run your own house. Just look at different things and what the thinking hats mean and apply to. So I kind of came to the end of the road, and I was like, what do I do next? And the principal, who was outgoing then, he was retiring. He was called Terry Loverty, and Terry suggested that, well, why not bring in philosophy? And I thought, philosophy. So he left in the June, and left me to think about it over the summer. And I was going, philosophy with kids. I think philosophy with adults is great, but I don't know about philosophy with kids. So what I did was, it was like a sort of, we seed had been planted and it sort of grew and I went, So I thought, I researched it. And I saw this guy in London called Pete Worley, and he was doing philosophy in a primary school. And I said, God, I'd love to talk to this man. So I rang him up and he says, sure, come on over. And that's just where it all started from. Me going over to London, and the rest they say is history. I mean, Pete Worley has been in this school at least six or seven times. I've been over with him training on many different occasions. Every member of staff is trained in philosophy.
That's amazing.
Teachers and classroom assistants, they all love it. I do philosophy with the classroom assistants on a Thursday our morning from 11 to 12. And as I said, the Johnny Cash stuff, you know, I'll bring that in and frame it. And we would talk about xenophobia. All the sort of different issues and how we can look at it philosophically, you know, and have a discussion in and around it. And even if there's issues that grew up, you know, if there's bullying in the room, what would we do? And what is bullying? And looking at sort of different models of how people are looking after bullying and things like that. So it's all brilliant, and it's for me, that is a wee professional learning community in itself.
You know, that must be amazing. You know, you're empowering these kids, you know, for when they're adults, sort of shaping them with values that will be of great use when they're grown ups. You know.
Yeah. Well, for me, philosophy is a discipline of the values. It is, because at the end of the day, you're going to need these values to deal with certain situations and certain emotions, and the need to know, well, what are these values? We take them in. You know, you're looking at compassion, looking at empathy, leadership, trust, innovation, your community. These are all values within themselves, and they're great philosophical themes that we would do. Nice. So as part of the values you're talking about there, what we would do is in the school, we have what's called a mental health week, right? And what I do is I take the mental health week, and on the Monday we would do manners.
Right. Okay.
Okay. What are manners? Manners. Cost nothing, but they mean everything. You know, so we could do all the different. And then on a Tuesday, we'd look at kindness, and on a Wednesday, we'd look at gratitude, and on a Thursday, we'd look at loneliness, and we would look at songs, and happiness is always the phrase. Always have the end on happiness. You know, we would use that song, "Cause I'm Happy, Happy Long." Yeah. So we would use that, and we would use I devised this triangle of happiness for the kids. And I don't know if you've ever heard of eudaimonia. Well, eudaimonia is a term from Aristotle, and it means basically happiness. And there's a triangle in and around it that if you follow the triangle, you will achieve happiness. And it is accepting responsibility. Taking responsibility, accepting whatever happens, and living with ariete. Have you ever heard of ariete?
No.
Well, ariete is striving for excellence.
Okay.
So you're living with always trying to strive for excellence.
Yeah.
So it's living with ariete, taking responsibility, and accepting whatever happens. And if you can get those three all working together, you will, in Aristotle's world, get eudaimonia, which is happiness.
Yeah.
And this is something I teach the kids. So that would be a philosophy lesson I would do with the children and themselves. And I think that's important because with philosophy, you have the conceptual questions, but you also have the normative. And the normative, you're never really going to meet unless you really home in on it. And normative is, okay, what do you see yourself doing when you leave education? Or what is the purpose of life? Or what really is family? You know, so these questions, these sort of normative questions, aren't really tackled in any school whatsoever.
Yeah,
and it's important that a lot of people know what they sort of are, you know. Yeah. And of course, the big one that all the staff in here are really aware of is this: what is the best philosophical question to ask? Yeah. Now, I had Queen's University students in here, right? And they're in to do philosophy. With the lads as part of their degree.
Wow.
They have to come in to philosophy. Now, I said this to Dr. Jeremy Watkins 8 years ago, and fair play to him, he took it on board. I said, get the students out in the schools as part of their degree. And he's doing that now. It's brilliant. Wow. Absolutely brilliant. So these two students come in and they're all, "Oh, we know everything about philosophy," and they're nice. I says, "Really? Okay, so what's the best philosophy question to ask a child?" And they were like, "Why? What? How?" And I says, "Oh, really? That's not the way I would say it." He says, "Well, what is?" And I says, "Well, the best philosophy question you can ask anybody is one that is grammatically closed but conceptually open." And they said, "Oh, what do you mean? Grammatically closed and conceptually open?" And I said, "Yes. You see, a grammatically closed question is one that elicits a one-word answer. Yes, no, maybe. Do aliens exist? Yes. No.
Yeah.
Maybe. You see?
So
right away, I get a feel for the room. I know what kids believe. I know what kids don't believe. I know what kids are unsure. You know, and that's really where the philosophy is. See the ones who are, don't really know. So then, doesn't it become contestable and debatable because it's conceptually open? It's about aliens. It's about some people from another world, or maybe people from this world. You know, I mean, one kid said to me, "Sir, do you ever think that we are the aliens?" And I went, "What?" And he says, "Yeah." He says, "This is what I mean." And I says, "Well, that maybe we came down and took over this world. And the animals are the inhabitants." Listen. And do you know, I know another kid said to me, "Well, I'm probably going to love this." He said, see all these apparent aliens that come down to visit us. He says, maybe they're from the future, and maybe they are future us.
Oh my God.
And they're trying to warn us what we're doing to this planet. Is that how we're going to turn out?" I'm like, What would I think like that when I was a child? You know what I mean? I would like to tell you that's my thinking. In fact, that was, I came up with that. Was
kids amazing. Are just mental, aren't they? Just the things they come out with is just,
wow. Must be for it. And if you don't provide that form, Paul, how are they going to come up with that?
Yeah. It's about building that basis, isn't it? Building that basis. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you're getting kids to listen to kids.
Yeah.
Kids listening to kids. So once I have that done, that's my job. Once kids start listening to kids and you're the facilitator, it's the wow factor. It's like, good, this is brilliant. It's just all self-regulator. That's what philosophy is. It's inescapable, of course, but it's self-regulator.
Yeah. I mean, the movie premiered in New York at the New York Film Festival a while back. I mean, it must be really crazy to think that, you know, how far reaching your work has become, you know, as part of this film.
Yeah, big time. Absolutely. Now, the only thing is, Paul, I'm going to say this to you, okay? The only thing is this, it needs to get to Las Vegas. And I want to go.
Put it on the wall of Graceland out there, you know, on the
absolutely. Here he is, the Elvis singing Maverick principal who does philosophy. Oh, God. Las Vegas, Graceland, who cares? As long as I get near the king with this, you know, and wouldn't you just love it? Wouldn't you just love it if the likes of Lisa Marie Presley was to watch this?
Oh, wouldn't that be incredible?
Wouldn't that be incredible?
I'd say she might hear about it. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, if he's being mentioned in this philosophy film, you know, who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
Even Riley Keough. She could watch it too, and that's Elvis's granddaughter. But anyway, when you think about the end, the mural, okay, that beautiful mural, and Connor being depicted in that beautiful mural.
Yeah, no, it was incredible.
Nice. Murals are a big part of our doing.
Yeah.
They really are. I mean, everywhere you go, there may be a music one or a youth club one or a sporting one, but they're a big part, and they're a celebration of the success of the likes of the Ardoin community. Now, I'm so proud to have this one straight outside the school, and it hasn't been touched. And you often see kids standing reading Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, and John Stuart Mill, you know, and they're going, I get it now, you know. So it's fantastic. It really, really is that. Not only we educate the school, but we educate the community.
Yeah.
And you're given the community confidence to be confident. Do you know what I mean? And to me, that's very, very important. And that's why philosophy is so important here, but also that it works because the parents value what we do.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking forward to Young Plato 2. You know, this is your trip over to Graceland, you know.
Yeah.
To teach all the kids over there about philosophy, you know.
And in fact, we didn't get to really do this when we were down. I mean, I was raging that it was pulled away from you so quickly.
Yeah.
But I think it was better because now you really get to see what it's all about by doing this Zoom. You know, it's much for you, it's much better. And yeah, listen, obviously honoured, and it's a privilege to be able to send this message out into the world. Philosophy works with children. Get it into primary school.
That's the thing, you're starting the ball rolling. I think, honestly, you think now people are going to see this film and think, wow, we really need to. So the phone's going to start ringing now.
Elvis, yeah,
your Elvis ringtone will start. That was another thing I loved. I loved in the film when your phone kept going off. The kids were dancing in the classrooms.
I'll be honest, hello. Mama. I'm coming home. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Doing all the little leg movements and stuff. Your phone went off, you know.
Yeah. He is funny. Ethan is one funny wee kid. You know, when that goes off, I mean, that was spontaneous. You know, him getting up and doing that dance. And then when the camera started rolling, and I really should have got it when the camera was rolling, I said to him, Ethan, why are you doing that? He says, that's what Elvis does to me, sir. And I couldn't agree more.
Oh, you know, man. Really, yeah, it's just the way it's filmed. You know what I mean? It's so natural, and the kids are so natural. You know, normally yeah. you stick a camera in front of a kid, and they're like, you know, the tongue's out, and they're all, you know,
tongue-tied and silly things.
Well, they don't want to go shy.
Two fingers and
yeah, oh, yeah. No, it was just amazing. None the way it was so, you know, as we said earlier, that it felt like there was no camera there. You were literally just this little, you just had this little kind of spy camera in the wall, and you were watching what was going on. It was just so natural.
I would love you to see the bloopers. Oh my gosh.
Man, I can imagine. That'll be on the DVD.
I mean ones that I do on purpose. And I'm not joking. If you ever get to talk to Nessa again, you could say to her, what was he really like? You see, he was mad. And Mrs. Reela looked green. As Nessa said to me, she says, you know what, Kevin, I've met a lot of men in my life, she says, and I've done an awful lot of films in my time, she says, but I knew sometimes I would go in and see a film, go, who's he again? Yeah, that's, she says, I'll never forget your name.
You're unforgettable, Kevin, I'll say that.
Yes, that's what she said anyway, so, but
I'm assuming that Elvis got rescued from the bin, anyway.
He certainly did. Of course he did. Tell him where he's shit, he's come back in. She says, I'm come back in, not Elvis. Not Elvis at all. But for me, this is also surreal, because I was talking to Jean-Marie yesterday after we came back from the Dublin Festival. We were all lifted and joyous, and then we came in on Monday, and it was just two phone calls came in, and just went, boom. Welcome back.
Welcome back
to reality.
But, it's, I mean, quite nice. I'm hearing all the kids screaming in the corridors, and you know,
they're all out playing in the yard, so they are.
Thank you so much, Kevin. This has been an absolute privilege talking to you today.
Not a problem. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the chat.